From the moment Lady Sings the Blues hit shelves in 1956, Billie Holiday's memoir stood apart from typical celebrity tell-alls. Critics fixated on factual discrepancies, missing the raw emotional truth that made the book, like her music, so powerful. Written with William Dufty, the memoir captures Holiday's authentic voice, as if she's speaking directly to you across her kitchen table, sharing stories both heartbreaking and triumphant. Born Eleonora Fagan in 1915 Baltimore to teenage parents, Holiday's early life was marked by extraordinary hardship. Her mother, Sadie, just 13 when she gave birth, scrubbed hospital floors to keep her baby while her musician father pursued his career elsewhere. Left with relatives who beat her, Holiday found comfort only with her great-grandmother, a former slave whose death traumatized the young girl so severely she was hospitalized for shock. By 16, she was working as a domestic, scrubbing white steps across Baltimore for 15 cents instead of the standard nickel. Music became her escape. She'd run errands for a local madam just to hear Louis Armstrong and Bessie Smith records playing on the Victrola. "I'd have run errands for anyone with a Victrola playing Pops and Bessie," Holiday explains, "even a minister." At 15, Holiday arrived in New York with her mother, carrying the weight of childhood trauma and abuse. After refusing demands from a powerful Harlem figure, she was arrested and sentenced by Judge Jean Hortense Norris to 4 months on Welfare Island, where she faced harsh conditions and solitary confinement. Released in winter with only a silk dress, she maintained her independence, a choice validated when Norris was later removed for judicial misconduct. Facing eviction, Holiday found her calling at Pods and Jerry's. Unable to dance during her audition, she sang "Travelin' All Alone," mesmerizing the crowd and earning substantial tips. Her dignified refusal to collect money from tables earned her the nickname Duchess, later becoming Lady. As Prohibition ended, Harlem's vibrant club scene connected her with John Hammond and Benny Goodman, leading to her first recording. At her Apollo Theater debut, arranged by Ralph Cooper, she overcame severe stage fright to deliver a stunning performance of If the Moon Turns Green and The Man I Love, earning a rare extended engagement. The Harlem that Holiday knew extended far beyond its entertainment district. Her apartment with her mother became a vital community hub, serving as a YMCA, boarding house for musicians, soup kitchen, and after-hours spot known for whiskey and fried chicken. Despite her limited schooling, she taught her mother to read and write, and their home became legendary for its transformative jam sessions. There, she met Lester Young, her musical soulmate. After finding him living in poor conditions, they took him in. He christened her Lady Day and her mother Duchess, while she called him Prez. Their sessions produced musical breakthroughs, including Lester's famous saxophone duel with Chu Berry. When critics questioned Lester's style, Billie championed individuality. "Everyone's got to be different. You can't copy anybody and end up with anything worthwhile. No two people on earth are alike, and music demands that uniqueness." In 1937, Holiday became the first Black female vocalist touring with a white band, Artie Shaw's Orchestra. "Don't tell me about pioneer women facing Redskins," she says. "I'm the girl who went west with 16 white musicians, Artie Shaw and his Rolls Royce, with hills full of white crackers." She endured constant racial abuse, from Kentucky police, hostile hotel owners, and venues refusing her entirely. Though bandmates defended her, even destroying a restaurant that denied her service, she struggled daily for basic necessities. In Detroit, locals attacked trumpet player Chuck Peterson for socializing with her. The situation peaked at New York's Lincoln Hotel, where management forced her to use the back entrance and limited her to one off-air song nightly. She quit after Shaw conceded to management's discrimination, remarking that, "At least Southern racists were honest to your face about their prejudice." Moving from Harlem to Cafe Society downtown marked a dramatic cultural shift. Through John Hammond, Holiday met Barney Josephson, who envisioned a revolutionary, non-segregated club where everybody's going to be for real. Opening night featured an all-star lineup, and despite nearly being derailed by a missing cabaret license, the show went on with 600 people in attendance. At Cafe Society, Holiday discovered Strange Fruit, Lewis Allen's poem about lynching that resonated deeply with her father's death. She collaborated with Sonny White and Danny Mendelsohn to set it to music. Her first performance was met with stunned silence before building to full applause. Though it became her biggest Commodore hit, performing it took an emotional toll. The song affects me so deeply, I get physically sick after performing it. Her time there highlighted the contrast between Uptown's authenticity and Downtown's social pretense. In May 1947, federal agents cornered Holiday in Philadelphia. Though she'd never driven before, she escaped their gunfire to New York, where she performed at the Onyx Club while helping free her accompanist Bobby Tucker from jail. After a week of surveillance, agents arrested her at the Hotel Grampian. Charged with possession, she declined legal counsel. The DA noted how dealers exploited her, charging hundreds for drugs worth dollars. And despite earning $250,000 in 3 years, she had nothing left. The judge sentenced her to a year and a day at Alderson Federal Women's Reformatory. At Alderson, Holiday endured forced cold turkey withdrawal in isolation. The segregated prison maintained separate facilities for Black and white women. She faced brutal labor conditions, from vegetable picking despite her insect phobia, to piggery work after suffering sunstroke, before permanent kitchen duties starting at 5 a.m. Her sole comfort came from thousands of Christmas cards sent by global fans from Shanghai to Cape Town, reminding her she wasn't forgotten. 10 days after her release, Holiday performed at Carnegie Hall, selling out a packed Easter Eve show. When someone sent gardenias, her trademark, she accidentally drove a hat pin into her scalp while pinning them. Despite blood running down her face, she performed 34 numbers before passing out. As an ex-convict, she couldn't get a cabaret card to perform in New York venues serving alcohol, lamenting that she was a citizen in Philadelphia, Washington, Boston, and San Francisco, but not in New York. Her 1954 European tour brought overwhelming acclaim, with crowds greeting her in Copenhagen. She admired how European music journalists focused on the music itself and how their countries treated addiction medically rather than criminally. Holiday remained fiercely original. Everyone's gotta be different. You can't copy anybody and end up with anything worthwhile. She died on July 17, 1959, at age 44, but her voice, both in music and words, continues to resonate with unflinching honesty and defiant spirit.